go to kboo.fm and then give us a call about, we're taking input on our draft mission and vision statements.
Proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School Series, Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally. Classes will start July 8th and continuing for 4 weeks on Wednesdays at 7 at Southeast Uplift in Portland. Classes will focus on issues such as federal policy toward Native peoples, inequities Portland's Native peoples face, blood quantum, and more. It will also address contemporary ideas of privilege, white fragility, and the complexities of intersectionality. Again, that's Portland's Urban Native Americans, What You Need to Know to Be an Ally, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. at Southeast Uplift, 3534 Southeast Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Attention KBOO members and listeners. The KBOO Foundation is seeking to fill 4 upcoming vacancies on the Board of Directors. Terms run 3 years, beginning on October 1st. The nomination packet, due July 11th, is posted on the KBOO website and paper copies are available at the station. Candidates must submit the completed nomination packet via email to kboocommunity@gmail.com or mail or drop off the completed nomination packet, care of Timothy Welp, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Incomplete forms will not be considered as fulfilling the statement of interest requirement by the KBOO bylaws. Packets are due by Saturday, July 11th. The candidate statements submitted as part of the nomination packet will be posted to KBOO's website, and candidates will be expected to participate in an interview for broadcast and a Q&A session at the annual meeting. For more information, please contact the nominating committee at kboocommunity@gmail.com. I'm a loving the
old lion. Good morning. It's 9:02. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Here's what we've got coming up for you this morning. First, we speak with Kate Titus, Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon, and Dan Vicuña, National Redistricting Coordinator for Common Cause, about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on redistricting. Also, Oregon's efforts at redistricting and the Redistricting Reform Act of 2015. At 9:30, we speak with Lee Mercer, Board President of Healthcare for All Oregon. And at 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints in its entirety, which features interviews with young people on the front lines in the fight to keep abortion clinics open in Texas. Also, host Dennis Bernstein interviews longtime anti-death penalty advocate Michael Kroll. And he speaks with several activists about a crackdown on the poor and houseless in Berkeley, California. And at 11 o'clock, it's the KBOO Bike Show with news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. We sure appreciate it. If you're not a current member, you can become one easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says Donate Today. And we're going to get right now to our interview with Kate Titus and Dan Vicuña.
And good morning. I'm Kathleen Stevenson, and this is Political Perspectives on KBOO. And as Tammy mentioned, with us by phone are Kate Titus, Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon, and Dan Vicuña, National Redistricting Coordinator for Common Cause. And we are going to be talking about some of the things associated with this week's U.S. Supreme Court's decision on redistricting. Dan and Kate, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
And Dan, maybe we could start with you. The Supreme Court decision in the Arizona legislature versus Arizona Independent Redistricting Commission was a case where politicians were trying to halt reform of how voting districts are decided. Can you explain what the Arizona case was about and what the court said?
Sure. Well, I think as most of your listeners know, gerrymandering is a problem across the country. Every 10 years, we have to redraw congressional and state legislative districts to make sure that they're updated for population purposes, to make sure we know where people live and that they're equally represented in Congress and in state capitals. However, in a lot of states, in most states, where state legislatures, the elected politicians are responsible for this process for redrawing lines, they generally can't help themselves from taking advantage of that process for political advantage, be that to protect incumbents, for partisan advantage, to settle scores against political enemies. And what gets lost in the shuffle is fair representation for the people, making sure that communities stay together, that I mentioned, that really we're keeping track of population updates. So in some states, and Arizona was the first to do this in 2000, the citizens said enough. They decided that there's a better way. And so in 2000, the voters of Arizona passed Proposition 106, which created an independent citizens redistricting commission. It's a body made up of two Democrats, two Republicans, and one from neither party. With kind of strict conflict of interest provisions to make sure that they don't have close ties to the legislature, that their primary interest in redrawing both congressional districts and state legislative districts was in ensuring fair representation for the public. They went through two cycles of drawing districts after the 2000 census, the 2010 census. At the conclusion of both of those cycles, they created very competitive congressional districts. Arizona has nine districts. It's sort of gone back and forth, 5-4 Democrats, Republicans, depending on the year. And the Arizona legislature, the leadership legislature, didn't appreciate that. They wanted to wrest control back from the people to be able to draw congressional districts. So they sued under the U.S. Constitution's Elections Clause, which basically they made a claim that the Elections Clause limits very strictly who can draw those congressional districts, limited to only elected legislators. In what they were hoping for a very, very literalist reading of the Constitution, and fortunately, a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision authored by Ruth Bader Ginsburg rejected that interpretation. Justice Ginsburg made a very strong case that the ultimate sovereignty under the Constitution lies with the people. The idea that states cannot empower through the ballot initiative process the people to reform democratic institutions that may be failing them really turned democracy on its head. What they said was that both on redistricting specifically and also election reform generally, the people are empowered to make changes to ensure fair representation, to ensure equal access to the ballot. To basically ensure that, again, that democracy is working for them. So, the decision earlier, the decision was just a resounding victory for democracy. It opens the door to, in the 19 states of the direct initiative process to ensure that election reforms can be implemented by the people, especially those reforms like redistricting, in which the entrenched interests, have an interest in the status quo. So this allows the people to go above their head directly to make our democracy work. So just a great day.
And can you talk a little about how bad the problem of gerrymandering is, like some examples of just how bad it is in certain states?
Sure. I mean, in states like Republican-led states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, you have, Democrats maybe winning, half of the vote, but only a quarter of the seat. In Democratic-led states like Maryland and Illinois, Democrats may be winning slightly more votes than Republicans, but Republicans are being totally shut out, getting, far fewer seats both in the state legislature and in Congress than their vote would suggest. I mean, around the country, in a place like North Carolina, you have just a ton, up to half of state legislative districts that in which people are running unopposed because the districts have been so gerrymandered that the party's citizens who may be of a minority party in that district really see themselves as having no chance. So in the end, that leaves the voters with no choice. And ultimately, the consequences of this are, voter turnout is kept down because people realize, well, what's the point? This district has been jerry-rigged in a certain way that ahead of time, my vote doesn't really count. Legislators who are elected in those districts really don't have much incentive to talk to people from the other side, to get a full range of perspectives. They're really only interested in hearing from and appealing to sort of the extremes within their party. So it causes just a real problem for democracy and increases cynicism amongst the public. So it's a huge problem.
And I wanted to bring Kate Titus into this conversation to bring in the Oregon perspective. Kate, you are with Common Cause Oregon. What do you see happening with redistricting in Oregon? Can you tell us a bit about how it has generally worked in Oregon and what the current situation is?
Yeah, you bet. No, I think we know that across the country, the redistricting process matters. It's an inherently political process that can have enormous impact on election results. But that's also the case in Oregon, and there may be a false sense of complacency right here because at this moment in time, because people don't necessarily remember back very long historically. We think very contemporaneously, and the most recent redistricting process that we had here in Oregon in 2011 went reasonably well. It was considered to be somewhat successful. So after the last 2010 census, we had the 2011 process. Our Senate President Peter Courtney selected a legislative committee to oversee that. That was equal numbers, Democrats and Republicans. They did come to agreement. It wasn't challenged. It was a bipartisan agreed redistricting plan, and so people felt pretty happy with that. But the reason people felt like it was so successful, because it was really an anomaly. Over the last century, Oregon has only actually twice completed the process without major controversy. During the early part of the 1900s, for the first 5 or 6 decades, the redistricting process didn't happen against the law. The legislature, as it stands now, is mandated to review the district lines and make any adjustments based on population after each census every decade. And in the early part of the 1900s, it was the Republican Party that was in power, and they just didn't do the redistricting process. They refused to update the lines, and so that they were able to maintain their power, and the Republicans stayed in the majority, but the vote count, the districts were not distributed equally among the population that was shifting. Finally, that was challenged in court, and they were forced to redistrict, but those redistricting processes were never completed successfully either, because they were the legislature couldn't come to agreement. It was pushed to the Secretary of State to step in and help that process. There was one successful redistricting in 1981, and the only other one over 100 years has been this most recent one in 2011. So our history in Oregon has been one of it being very partisan, very contentious, and really characterized by sort of a wink and a nod culture of the political players, the legislators who are overseeing this, reviewing behind closed doors political data on sort of a partisan analysis of how different configurations, different maps will affect their party breakdown. They don't share that information publicly, so you don't see the partisan nature of the process, but that's what's happening behind closed doors.
I heard that the Portland City Club, who studied this issue quite extensively, recommended the kind of commission that you are talking about, and they've been trying to get a hearing at the legislature for this, but have been unable to do that. What are the forces that are preventing that from coming up?
Yeah, that's correct. There are four organizations in Oregon who have come together in a coalition, the Redistricting Matters Coalition. The Portland City Club is one, and I really commend them. They have provided a lot of the leadership to pull this together and steward it along. The City Club, Common Cause, the AARP, the Association of Retired People in Oregon, and the Oregon League of Women Voters have all been working very closely together. In 2012, right after the 2011 redistricting process, both the Portland City Club and Common Cause in Oregon put out reports analyzing what had happened in the redistricting process, commending the things that worked well, making recommendations for improving the process, and we coordinated those reports, released them simultaneously, and tried to begin a conversation about improving the process toward the next redistricting cycle in 2021. We've been working together since that time in coalition, brought in the League of Women Voters and AARP, and in 2013 brought a bill forward that would establish an independent citizens commission in place of having the legislature draw the district lines. Increasingly, that's being considered best practice, and as this national Supreme Court has ruled, it is now clearly a constitutional approach. There hasn't been much support for that, however, in the legislature. We had the 2013 legislature, two Republican legislators co-sponsored this bill for us. It was Representative Vicky Berger and Representative Jules Bailey. And what you'll find in most states is it's usually the minority party who's a little bit more willing to think about redistricting reform, because the majority party will always have more of an edge in the redistricting process. That bill had a hearing and a good discussion, but didn't go anywhere in that session. There was another bill this session not put forth by our coalition, a different model of a commission that was also brought up and didn't go anywhere. There are a few legislators who are interested and supportive of this, but by and large, most legislators are very skittish of letting go of legislative power over the process, because it's so critically important. You know, those who redraw the district lines have the power to strengthen and weaken the relative voting strength of whole communities and use it for partisan advantage. So legislators are very reluctant to look at giving up that power.
So what is the plan for your approach, for your campaign for changing this?
Well, we decided this session to focus on some smaller building blocks toward these larger goals. And we worked very hard on a bill to open up the current existing redistricting process that's run by the legislature, make it more transparent, bring more public input into that process. One of the practices that was used in the last redistricting process that was useful and successful was to have some public hearings around the state that allowed the public to review and give input to the process. It's not codified. It hadn't been codified in law. That was just something that the legislators who were leading that particular process thought to do. And it was valuable. It actually uncovered some problems with the maps that the legislature were drawing that they wouldn't have known about otherwise. So that was a good thing, and it opened it up the process in a way that allowed more public viewing of it. So we passed a bill this session with a lot of effort that codifies that into law. Having public hearings as part of the process will now, going forward, be a regular thing. There's a set number that there would need to be at least 10 around the state. And then one of the things that was really critical in this bill that hasn't necessarily been the case in the past, but to make sure that there are additional hearings after draft maps are available toward the end of the process, so that it's not just getting public input at the beginning, but once you're really talking about specific maps, to have public oversight of that process. So that's a really great bill. It will create more transparency in the process. It doesn't, however, move the process out of the hands of the legislature into a citizen commission, and that's something we want to work toward down the road. It will become increasingly difficult in the next few years to pass a bill for an independent commission, however, because as we get closer and closer to the next redistricting cycle, there will be even greater reluctance to make such changes. So it may take getting past the next cycle, which could be more par for the course, a problematic cycle that gets changed, that's seen as sort of a failure, scandalous in some way. Or we might have another fortunate session where things go relatively well. But in any case, once we get past the next redistricting process, there may be a little bit more openness to discuss major reform. But the coalition is continuing to build a base of public support right now.
And that's Kate Titus. She is the executive director of Common Cause Oregon. Also with us is Dan Vicuña, national redistricting coordinator for Common Cause. And a couple of questions. What is the Redistricting Reform Act of 2015?
Sure. So that's a congressional effort to bring independent redistricting to all the country. This bill, it takes from both the Arizona model and California, which has independent redistricting commission for its state legislature and congressional districts. What it attempts to do, and this is, you know, this is the same elections clause that that the Arizona legislature attempted to use to strip power from the people, also empowers Congress to set these rules for the country. It would create a commission of 12 people, 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, 4 who aren't affiliated with either party, and some alternates. They'd be application screened by a nonpartisan kind of entity in the state. In California, a state auditor does it. In Arizona, it's a commission on judicial appointments. And these people are based, you know, again, kind of avoiding individuals who may have close ties to politicians, to elected leaders, basing the selections on skills, making sure that they kind of represent the diversity of the state. We have the legislative leaders can then select from that pool. That's sort of their only bite at the apple in terms of participating. They can, you know, choose members of the commission from this pool that's already created and in which people are screened for conflicts of interest and sort of political political concerns. If the legislature is unable to kind of generate right selections or somehow a map isn't able to be drawn, it'll go to a court. D.C. District Court is going to create maps. But in addition, this body's given, you know, criteria that, you know, kind of the U.S. Constitution, the Voting Rights Act, ensuring that that districts are not sort of the ink splatter that you'll see in some states, that they're contiguous, they're close together, that communities of interest are recognized. You know, one of the most important issues in terms of redistricting is, you know, making sure that we sort of can keep communities coherent, and that districts are compact. So, you know, essentially it's a bill that would take redistricting, at least for congressional districts, out of the hands of self-interested legislators and return it to the people, kind of based on the independent commission models that were upheld in the recent Supreme Court decision.
And does this, the problem of gerrymandering and the problem of politicizing redistricting, does it correspond with other voter disenfranchisement issues in terms of states, say, where there are voter ID laws or attempts to get voter ID laws? Are they linked in any way?
Well, I think you'll see that there are some, occasionally, some of the same sort of financial backers of cases, you know, or of efforts to, you know, to gerrymander districts, to place barriers in front of people, voter ID. You'll see some of the same pools of supporters making sort of disingenuous arguments, you know, in terms of the voter ID protections, you know, about the integrity of elections, when in fact what they're trying to do, similarly to gerrymandering, is ensure that, you know, their people are empowered to vote, them, only the, quote, you know, right people, end quote. So I think there's certainly a link in terms of attempting to disenfranchise citizens, disempowering them from making their voices heard on election day.
And what about the issue of particularly people of color? I've heard that Texas has been gerrymandered so that Spanish-speaking population is all in almost one district or something very extreme like that. How would this kind of redistricting affect communities of color?
Well, sure. You know, one of the interesting tactics we've seen is a lot of state legislators are kind of using the Voting Rights Act as an excuse to pack as many minority voters into, you know, as few districts as possible, claiming that they're required to do that so that minority voters can choose their candidate of choice. But you know, they're going way overboard in packing, you know, making, you know, 60-70%, you know, Black or Latino districts in order to make sure that they have no influence around, you know, on surrounding districts. In fact, this term, the state of Alabama was found to have done just that, you know, perpetuated an illegal racial gerrymandering in their state legislative district. The state of Virginia, a federal court struck down their congressional districts as being an unlawful racial gerrymander. So it's an interesting tactic that I believe state legislatures thought they would get away with, but now I think it's catching up to them, and their ultimate goal of disenfranchising minority voters is being kind of uncovered. And I think the importance of these independent citizen commissions is that what they do is, you know, an important element of them is to make sure that the public has a voice, you know, that there are public meetings all around the state, and this happens in Arizona and California, where people come and give testimony to say, this is my community, this is a language community, or you know, maybe a Chinatown, you know, kind of a cultural community that's in one place that really should be kept together, and to ensure fair representation, but not sort of taken advantage of to be packed into a district to disempower them. So I think these commissions really play an important role in making sure the public's voices are heard in terms of where they should be placed.
Well, we are almost out of time. Maybe if there's anything that either of you want to add or emphasize about this conversation on redistricting, Kate, do you have something that you would want to say in the end of this interview?
Yeah, all I would say in closing is that I think the process of redistricting is one that matters crucially, and it's easy to tune out because it's wonky and technical, but at the end of the day, this can affect the power of our vote more than many things. For people who are interested to get involved, I urge you to go to the Redistricting Matters website, and you can contact us in that way. Or if you at least just want to stay informed about what's going on, go to the Common Cause website and sign up for our CauseNet alerts. You will get updates on this and other critical democracy reform issues.
And that's commoncause.org?
Yes.
And the redistricting site?
Just redistrictingmatters.org.
Great. And George Vicuña, do you have anything you would like to add in the last minute or so of this interview?
Well, I just say, you know, unfortunately, the threats, the sort of litigation threats against fair representation aren't over. So I would just urge listeners to keep an eye on in particular one upcoming case, Evanwell v. Abbott. It's a case in which the question of whether all people should be counted in terms of state legislative redistricting or just voters, it has huge implications for urban areas that may have immigrant populations or young populations or those with felony convictions. It could just have a huge impact on their ability to have fair representation in our legislature. So, the fight continues, and Common Cause will be right there fighting it.
And say again that name of that case and when it's coming up?
Sure. That's Evanwell v. Abbott. That'll be heard in the Supreme Court. They haven't put it on the schedule just yet, but it'll be heard next term sometime, and it is the really serious ramifications for fair representation.
Well, George Vicuña, National Redistricting Coordinator for Common Cause, Dan, I got your first name wrong there, Dan Vicuña,
no problem.
And Kate Titus, Executive Director of Common Cause Oregon, thank you so much for being with us talking about this issue. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
You're listening to Political Perspectives on KBOO Portland. When we come back, we will be talking with Lee Mercer. He is the board president of Healthcare for All Oregon. We're going to be talking about another Supreme Court-related issue, and that is healthcare. You are listening to Political Perspectives on KBOO, and the Supreme Court upheld the premium subsidies under the Affordable Care Act this term. That's ACA. Here to talk about that and major problems still remaining with our health care system is Lee Mercer, Board President of Healthcare for All Oregon. Lee Mercer, welcome. Thanks for speaking on KBOO this morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. What is Healthcare for All Oregon?
Healthcare for All Oregon is a growing statewide coalition. We're now up to 113 member organizations, including about 25 unions and union locals, that are advocating for a universal publicly funded healthcare system for Oregon and eventually for the United States.
Talk about your reaction to the Supreme Court decision upholding subsidies under the Affordable Care Act.
Well, Healthcare for All Oregon was very happy, of course. We're always happy when more people are covered by health care. And this decision affected 6.5 million U.S. citizens who could have been negatively impacted by the decision going south. And we were happy to see that those people will still be covered. And yet, as we're all learning, as the Affordable Care Act rolls out, a lot of people that are ostensibly covered by health insurance are not accessing health care due to the cost, the copayments, the coinsurance, the deductibles, and all the costs of kind of subsidizing the health insurance industry in this country.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about what the major problems still remaining are in our healthcare system right now.
That really probably is the major problem, is that we're wasting somewhere between 20% and 30% of our healthcare dollars on all of this administrative overhead, health insurance companies, the doctors in the hospitals needing tens of hundreds of staff to figure out this Gordian knot of complex health billing systems, when it could all be done like it is in so many countries around the world, in a single-payer system where all of the payments flow through the government to private health care, and it's all taken care of in a relatively simple manner for a lot less money.
What's your assessment of the current state of health care coverage in Oregon?
Well, as you know, the spokespersons for the progress, and it's true, you know, expanding Medicaid was great. more people are covered. The percentage, 95% of Oregonians being covered, is often thrown around, but it's the same basic problem as in the rest of the country. 95% coverage doesn't mean people are using or are accessing health care. Many people are foregoing health care because they can't afford the copays, the deductibles, and so forth. So it's health insurance, it's not health care.
Is the idea for the Oregon Health Care for All, is it to build on the Affordable Care Act, or would you rather see the Affordable Care Act superseded by another plan, a single payer?
Yeah, no, it is actually absolutely a plan to build on. There is, under the Affordable Care Act, actually, thanks to the foresight of Senator Wyden, there's a clause in the Affordable Care Act that allows in 2017 states to begin to go beyond what the Affordable Care Act has created. And a waiver is available allowing states to experiment with new systems as long as people are covered as well as the Affordable Care Act model. You can go in any direction as long as you can, you know, prove to the feds that you're going to be covering everybody. And this, the 20-plus states around the country that are thinking about moving to a single-payer type health plan are looking at this waiver, and that would be part of the planning to build from the Affordable Care Act to a truly universal system.
So I know Oregon Healthcare for All, or Healthcare for All Oregon, has been demonstrating at the state legislature and making concerns known. Is the idea to, we'll talk about the idea of what your approach is towards the change in Oregon.
Yeah, and we realize that these kinds of changes don't happen overnight. So we have run a single payer bill 3 sessions in a row, and each time we get